Dentists as a whole have been very reluctant to let AI into their offices. The common thing I hear is like, hey, it kind of feels like it's taking my job.
You know, we can sit here and whine and moan and complain about it and get nowhere and still be whining, moaning, and complaining next year. Or we can find the solution that won't take very long to fix. And most of these are just mental changes. You provide the insurance company what they're looking for and they want, you'll get paid. It's simple as that. And you make your life so much easier.
Welcome back to another episode of the Dental Marketing Theory Show. I'm your host, Gary Bird. I'm the founder of SMC National, where we help you create, convert, and close more new patients so you can grow the way that you want. But one of the things that you're going to run into when you try to grow your new patients is a lot of them are going to have insurance, and it creates a ton of problems. You don't know how to collect money. You don't know when to collect money. You just get caught up in all this drama. And today, I got the special privilege to talk to Travis Campbell, known as the Dental Insurance Guy, and he absolutely blew my mind with his resources and his perspective on insurance, and you are not going to want to miss this episode. You collect any insurance at all, I promise you're going to get a ton of value out of this show. Stay tuned. All right, Travis, I am super excited to have this conversation with you today because I have heard amazing things about you, your unique approach to dental insurance, your dry sense of humor, and I'm really, really, really excited to have this conversation with you today. So I would love for you to start with, how did you get into the dental?
So, you know, when I was growing up, my dad hated the dentist, and there's a few people around that didn't like dentistry either, and yet I always had a great experience. I always loved going, so that made me interested in, you know, wanting to learn more. And I shadowed my childhood dentist a couple of times, and that was always a good experience. So as I grew, I just learned to love dentistry more and more. So I've kind of wanted to be a dentist since I was younger than I can remember, really. And then dental industry has been really great for me because, I mean, I think the dental industry in general is just an awesome industry to be in. You know, we're healthcare providers. We get to help people and get, you know, paid decently well to do it. But of course, you know, the biggest concern that lots of us deal with is, you know, how to deal with getting paid, how to deal with dental insurance. And that one always frustrated me, I think, maybe just as much, if not more, than most dentists. I think what makes me unique is that, you know, I took that frustration, actually ran with it and started going, well, you know, the answers I'm seeing or hearing or, you know, getting or not getting just don't make sense. I don't like, you know, they're not cohesive. And so I did a lot of, you know, research and trial and error, and we managed a ton of things. And then during COVID, you know, I love my kids, but I couldn't stay home, you know, 24/7 with them, and still love them. So I kept going to the office, and I'd see, you know, one patient a day, and I'd have, you know, 7.5 other hours of something to work with. So I was reading dental insurance contracts and going through state and federal laws and, you know, the fun, exciting, amazing things that all of us just want to do as a dentist. But I learned a ton. And from that, that's kind of where textbook came from that I wrote. That's has been a really good seller. And I still get comments all the time about, you know, that people really appreciate that book. And then from there, the Dental Insurance Guy was born. You know, it's a website platform and a ton of CE content. And I'm on there every day answering questions. And, you know, we do monthly Q&A sessions. So there's so much available content there designed to help where, you know, it was information that I couldn't find in the past and just didn't exist. And so I wanted to provide the resource that I never was able to.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. You know, I often hear people online as people want to grow their groups or grow, you know, add more practices or add more associates. You often hear this conversation about cash accounting versus accrual accounting, right? And I always laugh because it's like, you know, it's like go to accrual. That's the way all businesses you have to operate. But if you don't have dental insurance figured out, it's almost impossible because it's like, okay, patient comes in, they're going to pay a little bit of cash right now. They're going to give you a credit card to charge maybe later. And then also you might get a check from an insurance company at some time in the future. We're not really sure on the dollar amount that they're going to be sending or who it's attached to when it comes, but you can figure that out later. And then trying to do accrual accounting around that is just like, it's scary, right? And so what's your point of view on that? Like, how do you help offices kind of navigate this landmine? Like, where do people even start with this?
Well, I think you actually said one of the things that a lot of offices should be doing, but don't, which is collect credit card authorization for balances that may exist in the future. I mean, And yet most offices are trying to call and email and text patients when they owe money. And I'm like, yeah, can you imagine you on the other end of that? Is that the phone call or text that you want to answer? Like, this is why it's sad, but the average collections for an office is like 92%. I'm like, dentistry is hard. And giving up 8% just because you're not collecting it seems insane.
Yeah.
And that's like money that you should be collecting. This has nothing to do with the insurance discounts or anything else. It just has to do with money not collected, which is a major problem. Now, how to answer that is there's so many aspects to insurance. I mean, I'm literally actually going to a seminar this week that I'm going to speak literally all day on just insurance. And that's only a fraction of what I could talk about. But it's fun because this is how we get paid. This is how the office runs. You know, in order to provide great care, we need the finances to pay teams and supplies and labs and everything else. But what, you know, the common challenges are, you know, for one, it's misuse of estimates. I mean, it's this thing all the time that I think a lot of offices and patients are like polar opposite on this. You know, an office sees it as, well, it's only an estimate, therefore it could be wrong. And, you know, you should just pay the balance that's there. And yet the patient's sitting there going, wait, I've already paid my portion. And if you're coming to me later, that's a surprise bill that either I don't have money for, I would never have done the treatment if I had known about, or you're just scamming me, or, you know, a whole thing of gambit that patients complain.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got something really, really important to share with you that's going to bring massive impact to your practice. So every year, things change in your market. Every single year, people move, incomes change, populations change, and it's really important that you stay up to date with that. And one of the things that we offer to all of our customers, and we want to offer it to all of our listeners completely for free, is mapping out your new patients. So we're not going to only show you where your new patients are coming from on a map, just like this above, but we're also going to show you the income areas that they're coming from, the different pockets of income, as well as the populations, to make sure that you have supporting areas to where you can attract more new patients. And lastly, we're going to map out all of your competition for you for free. This is 100% for free, no obligation. And we're really excited to share this with all of our listeners. So all you have to do is go to maps.smcnational.com, and it's first come, first serve. We're not going to offer this forever. So if you want to get this, get in now, get all your new patients mapped out for the new year. We're looking forward to talking to you soon. Thanks. Well, and I don't think that a lot of offices are very, or some offices, I should say, are not empathetic, right, towards this, because they think, like you said, just pay it. But what if you came to me for marketing and I was like, yep, here's what you're going to pay right now, and it's an estimate. And then at the end, I'm like, no, I was about $10,000 off. No biggie though, just pay it. Like, or they came to you for your services to help you with insurance or what, you know, whatever. And the same thing, they'd be so mad. So mad.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And so it's that, think of it from the patient's point of view. And of course, then I get the excuse that, well, it truly is an estimate. Like, we can't figure it out. I'm like, well, that's actually what I help teach people, is how to figure out estimates from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And our rule is 99% of our AR should be purely from insurance we know is coming. 1% failure rate, great. But the challenge is, so many offices are dealing with 20, 40, 80% failure rate on their insurance collections. And I'm sitting here going, that's a failure of the person doing the estimate. Mm-hmm. So my overall rule of thumb for this, and there are ways to do it, is always be refunding, never be collecting balance. Mm-hmm. Balances piss people off. Balances lose office patients. Balances get negative reviews. And balances make your job harder at marketing the office, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Negative reviews. So I love this. So basically what you're doing is you're going in and saying, okay, learn these loopholes, overcharge, and then give people back money and they're going to love you. And what pops into my brain, say this, is, have you ever watched the movie Incredibles, the cartoon, The Incredibles? Okay. Remember when the dad is at his job and the little old lady's on the other line and she's like, but my car was wrecked and I need, and he's like, nope, I'm sorry, you have to, this is why you don't qualify. And then he whispers into the phone, he gets underneath his desk, go fill out form 102B, make sure that you say that you're selecting, you know, format D, and he goes, and if you do this, then you'll get your refund. All right, bye. And he hangs up and he literally gives them the blueprint to find the loophole in insurance. Kind of feel like that's what you're doing, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And I would modify one thing you said. It's not overcharge the patient. It's make sure the estimate is to the point that there is never a surprise bill. And there's so many, like, exclusions and limitations in insurance policies that it comes down to the, if you don't know that exclusion exists, then assume it does. It's one of those things that it's there unless proven innocent. So this is completely different from the US justice system. It's insurance is guilty until you prove them correct. And therefore, if you work that way, then you won't have surprise bills for patients.
So yeah, and so you're not overcharging. You're not overcharging. You're assuming that their insurance isn't going to cover it in whatever case, right? Is that kind of the way to look at it?
Let me give you some details that maybe will help. So for instance, the number one issue in the US with insurance is called downgrades, meaning you do one service, but insurance pays for a different, lower quality, lower price service. Well, this is the most common limitation on policies. It's how employers get their premiums down. This is just the insurance's way to, you know, make their client happy, which is the employer, not the patient. And so, you know, you do say a white filling, which most patients want nowadays. Insurance says they're going to pay a silver filling. That's half the cost. Well, if you estimated that insurance was going to pay for the filling you did, the patient's going to end up with a major balance that they're going to be upset about. And so if you get a breakdown, information from the insurance company that says what they will and will not pay, and it says nothing about downgrades, therefore you have to assume they're guilty and that they will down. Mm-hmm. It's things like this that it's not even working outside the policies. Basically, assuming what's the most common things, unless you know that literally that doesn't exist. And it's because offices, you know, some offices will get a full breakdown of everything and know exactly what the patient or insurance is going to pay because they spent like an hour on the phone doing it. But a lot of us just don't have the teams to do that. And so the simple answer is figure out all the things that insurance may not pay for, may pay less for, and apply those when you're coming up with the estimate. And therefore, the only times you're ever going to be wrong is when the patient has money back.
So good. So how long does it take? I love this, by the way. The reason I love podcasting is because I get to come and learn cool stuff like this. And you're absolutely blowing my mind. So how long does it take? So let's pretend I'm a dentist. I got three practices and just like RCM, AR, it's just like beating the fire out of me. Like I feel like every single day it's something I can't figure it out. How long does it take to get something like that organized and learn these tools and get at least in moving in the right direction?
That's a great question because it depends on where people start. I will say, I mean, the website's got a platform of over 20 hours of recorded content, but they're all organized into hour or less segments, and they're all topic oriented. So if you're having a challenge with downgrades, there's a course on downgrades. If you're having a challenge with estimates, there's a course on estimates. There's one on treatment planning. There's one on crowns and scaling and root planning. They're pretty much a course for anything. So it's, you know, it depends on the challenge that you're having. Now, how to solve it is, hey, you got to find out your challenge, you know, for one. And it's like every problem we have in, you know, our lives is you got to admit to the problem. But then the fun part is there's a solution to every problem, too. You know, we can sit here and whine and moan and complain about it and get nowhere and still be whining, moaning, and complaining next year. Or we can find the solution that won't take very long to fix. And most of these are just mental changes or, you know, little organizational changes. And therefore, we make more money. We have happier patients. You know, the whole process is easier. There's less frustration. So everyone wins, even potentially the insurance company, because you're not sitting there dealing with appeals all the time, which costs the insurance company usually, you know, 10 or 20 times as much than that original claim did.
Okay, a couple of changing gears on you, questions around insurance. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about this? Let's just get out of insurance altogether, dental movement. And I'll be fully candid with you. I've seen people do it really successfully. Like, hey, we're just not going to play ball with these guys and we're just going to be really good at what we do and we'll bill to the PPOs, which is great, right? But we're not making any promises, anything like that. And I've seen them do it really successfully, but I've also seen people strike out majorly too at the same time. So what are your thoughts on that?
So that movement has been around since dental insurance existed over 50. I mean, it is what it is. Now, I will say the movement's gotten more traction than it's ever had before. But even if you say it's double, it's still not a large chunk. I mean, over 90% of offices are in network with one insurance company still, at least.
Wow, 90%?
And so this movement might bump it to 85, but it's not going to make a massive difference. For one, you got to think about most DSOs are not going to go out of, and that's about half the market in most areas. For two, you know, there's a lot of patients that are, you know, for whatever term you want to use, brainwashed to only go in network. So there is always going to be a need for an in-network set of offices unless the entire American culture changes around their thoughts on insurance. So, and for one part, and this is part I didn't tell you about my story, I started my office from scratch in network with everybody. And then I actually ended up dropping almost all of them. And I was almost completely out of network. And then I went back in network. When I went back in, we doubled collections. So the point is, both systems work well if you manage them well. And that's the biggest point I try to make is if you want to be in network and it fits your personality, your patient base, then great, do it, but be efficient and profitable. Okay. And if for whatever reason, those, you know, what that takes doesn't work for you, then awesome, be out of network, but realize there are some checks and balances. I mean, you're probably one of the biggest ones is, you know, insurance is a form of marketing.
It is.
And when you start dropping insurance, you have to have a balancing form of marketing. The upside of insurance is you pay on the back end through, you know, that insurance discount. The downside of marketing is you pay on the front end before you get anything. So it's which, pick your poison, yeah, you which one's on the, better
yeah.
for you.
You want to pay on the front or you want to pay on the back? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can be really good at both, or you can be really good at one of them and make mm-hmm. everything work. There's business models around both. People yep. figure that out. So what are your thoughts on membership? Let's just get everybody into a membership. And it's like, they're legally, they're not allowed to call it this, but it's basically their in-house insurance plan. Mm-hmm. And I think those are amazing for uninsured patients, but the insurance patients, a little bit harder of a person to convert to that mindset. What are your thoughts there?
I think membership plans can be awesome if they're utilized well. I mean, if the price is set right, meaning not too high or too low. I mean, if it's too low, that doesn't work for the office. If it's too high, you can't convince patients to do it. But the other thing to think about is most plans, most strategies, most, you know, organizations, everything we do is only as effective as how good we are at making it. So for instance, if we're not very good at selling the plan or talking about it, then not a lot of patients are going to pick it up. And so for instance, we have patients that occasionally come in and go, man, my insurance isn't really doing a whole lot for me. I'm like, no, because you've been with my office for 10 years and you need dental work. And what's your premiums? Okay, it's $50 a month. That makes sense. That's about average. But guess what? If you had paid out of pocket for these two visits a year that you always have, you'd actually pay less than your insurance. So my suggestion is maybe look at doing this membership plan that's going to cost you this much a year, and your insurance company is costing you this much more a year, which makes more sense to you. So, you know, it's not about just dropping everybody off of insurance. It's about showing them the numbers and saying, oh, does this work for you? Is this not work for you? And I mean, the overarching thing I love about healthcare is we get to focus on doing the best thing for that patient. And that's both clinical and non-clinical. And so, you know, if we adopt that mindset, then, you know, membership plans can be huge.
Awesome. Okay. And then last question for you. What are your thoughts on AI? And let me explain what I mean by AI. What I have seen is dentists as a whole have been very reluctant to let AI into their office, kind of. And the common thing I hear is like, it may not be true. This may be confirmation bias just from talking to select people, but hey, kind of feels like it's taken my job, right? Like I'm the one that's supposed to be finding these problems, diagnosing them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so you don't see a lot of adoption of AI into reading x-rays and those kind of things in dental offices yet. But on the other hand, what I've been told is that the insurance companies absolutely love AI and are utilizing it. And so now what you have, where before it used to have to be a human on the insurance side to find discrepancies. So they would only really worry about the bigs, right? There was only the big things. But now with AI, they can find discrepancies on pennies if they want, right? Or on dollars or on $10 or $100. And they can kind of battle you on every single battlefront, and it doesn't really cost them anything. What are your thoughts on that? First of all, did I get that spectrum correct on insurance using AI versus the dentist not using AI? But then second, how do you see that unfolding?
So I think you got it pretty accurate. It's now the thing to think about is AI has been used by insurance companies for a decade or more. Now, how much of it is a different story. You know, there is AI that can look at just, you know, are the details of the claim correct? And therefore, if they are, we automatically pay. That's actually a positive thing for the office. It's why, you know, if you get a check back from the insurance company in like a week, you know, no human ever looked at that check. That was purely run by a computer, which is a positive. It's easy. It's cheap for the insurance company. And we get our money faster. But when it comes to like, you know, fillings, crowns, you know, the higher dollar stuff, there's in the past have always been looked at by a human. Well, humans are wrong. Humans have bias. Humans have a lot of things they can't see. And an AI actually can interpret an x-ray better than a human in almost every case. Now, that comes up to, you know, the concept you said is, well, they're taking our job away. Well, not exactly, because you got to think about, as a dentist, you know, yes, we have to read x-rays, but that's like step one of 20. Then we have to interpret that. Then we have to look at the entire mouth. We have to look at the patient. We have to figure out what we're going to do about that. Then we have to convince the patient. So it's communications. Then we have to actually do the work. And then we have to make the patient happy at the end, bill it, everything else. So there's lots of steps that the AI is never going to be able to do. And so I don't see it as a threat in some ways. I mean, we had an AI software in our office. I loved it because what it did is it sped me up because I didn't have to sit there and question, like, well, you know, is this really touching the DEJ and is the cavity that needs filling or not? It was just the AI would poke it with a certain color and go, okay, I'm just going to follow that because in the past, it's always been right and accurate. But the other thing, too, that's been fun is having a hygienist. So the hygienist a lot of times will go, well, you know, doctor may or may not talk about doing a filling here, but there is some damage. If you have the AI, it's like, well, if it's yellow, the doctor's going to say, watch it. And if it's red, the doctor's going to say, you need to treat it. That's simple as that. So it can be a great communication tool with your team.
Speeds up the internal conversation, right? Because you're just like, hey, if it's red, I'm going to do it. If it's yellow, I'm going to say, watch it. And if they know that every time, that just speeds up alignment.
Plus, you know, we know patients can't really read x-rays, but they can see red on a screen. So it's patient communication and it can help with sales. And so there's so many aspects to that. But then you think about, okay, if the insurance companies are already using the AI and we can't, I mean, you can complain all day long, but it's not going to change the fact that they're using it. If we have it in our own office, then we see what they're seeing. Meaning if you want to do a certain restoration, and the AI is going, it's not that they're saying you can or cannot do it. It's only telling you how much, for instance, two structures missing, which is what the insurance company is going to go off of. If it goes over the threshold, then great. You know, the insurance company is pretty much going to pay that claim without even thinking about it. And if it goes under the threshold, then you need to think, okay, do I need to change process? Do I need to maybe take some photos? Do I need a, you know, a stronger narrative? What do I need? So it can actually benefit if you want to use it. But again, at the end of the day, insurance companies are basically not changing anything. The only thing the AI has done is made them more efficient. That's it. You know, they were denying claims 30 years ago. They're denying claims now. And the only thing that's changed that isn't the AI, although AI likes to get blamed for it. It's the fact that there's been so much fraud in the past over certain procedures and codes that the insurance company is requesting more information on those potentially fraudulent cases. And if you provide them what they want, and this is a big part of what I teach all the time, if you provide the insurance company what they're looking for and they want, you'll get paid. It's simple as that. And you make your life so much easier. Like, we hate appeals just as much as insurance companies hate appeals. So how about you get to the point where it costs us money, it costs us time, it costs us frustration, and it costs us the patient look at that EOB, possibly reading, oh, was this service not necessary or did they overtreat me? Or, you know, who knows what the patient's going to think when they read that. And so, you know, learning how the insurance company works helps us be able to provide them with information that gets them to do what we want them to do, really.
It's awesome. This has been super, super helpful. Learned a lot. Where can people get in touch with you if they want help with their insurance? They have
so dentalinsuranceguy.com. I mean, the one probably biggest factor I would say of that, other than the CE courses, is it's got a Q&A session. So you literally put a question, post a claim that you're having a challenge with, post, you know, whatever you need. I'm the one answering those questions every day. So it's a lot of fun, but it's got instant access and availability and so much help for people who need it.
It's awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on today. You did an amazing job. And as always, I always learn so much on this show. And today was no exception.
Well, it was a pleasure, Gary. Thank you.